talked about reconciliation, and a lot of the church is avoiding that. We're just being nice and saying, well, that's all past. That's not who we are now. But that's one of those hard issues that we need to recognize and speak out the truth in love so that we can move forward. And it's not just being nice to the Indigenous people.
No, we need to be able to sit with our discomfort to even know what kindness looks like. Have we asked the question?
This is Journey with Care, a podcast by Care Impact, where curious Canadians find inspiration to love others well through real-life stories and honest conversations. What if we've been measuring kindness all wrong? We crave the big moments, those grand gestures, but what if the real impact of kindness happens in those moments no one sees? You know, sometimes we throw an icebreaker question in our interviews just for fun, you know, to get the conversation moving, something unexpected, meant to loosen things up before we get into the deeper stuff. But this time with Zach, so we're talking about our last episode with Zach Manti, the ripple effect, small acts, big impact. We gave Zach this question: if kindness were a mascot, what would it be and why? And honestly, we weren't expecting anything deep or profound.
He was on point.
Yeah, like his answer was a bumblebee. And it kind of drove our conversation, and it kept coming up in the conversation. He described how bees, you know, tiny in size, are crucial to the environment, how they pollinate other plants, and we wouldn't have plants without them, that sort of thing. And then he connected it back to kindness in a way that kind of stopped us in our tracks. Kindness works the same way. It's often unnoticed, but over time, it transforms communities. And that became the perfect metaphor for our episode and our conversation with Zach. Small, unnoticed, foundational acts of kindness. So today we're going to lean into that conversation that we had with Zach, because the smallest acts of kindness are like bees' pollination. I mean, we're not going to talk about pollination here. We're not scientists. We're not going to get into the weeds of that, but you want to kick us off with what your thoughts were on our conversation we just had with Zach?
Yeah, there were so many thoughts. And in fact, it's been a lingering thought as I went on my day and as we were coming into here. I have a lot of thoughts on that, but I did like the analogy with the bumblebee, how many acts of kindness, you don't get a jar of honey just because one bee goes to one amazing flower. It's just over and over again. It's continuously showing up in those small ways, seemingly small ways, but then also that notion of we need to do this together. It's not like me doing a bunch of tiny acts makes all the difference. It's when I do it in community, when we all work in our strengths and in the opportunities, when we're present in these places. So I think there's a lot here that we can unpack today. Johan, what were some things that you were thinking of as you left the podcast?
Yeah, there are a few things, but going back to that bee analogy, we didn't talk about it in the episode, but I was thinking about how bees produce honey, not necessarily for everybody else, but it benefits everybody else out of their abundance of just doing what they do. So like those small acts of kindness, it can actually benefit a whole community, not just the person you're being kind to. It's out of that abundance of goodness and being kind to others that it really benefits the whole community. So that's one thought that came to mind that I probably could have chimed in on, but you know, you guys were riffing, so I don't want to interrupt you.
We never need conversation starters with Zach. We always have things to talk about, which is a lot of fun. Another thing we really dove into was the whole idea of anti-capitalism, thinking differently about our kindness. And it's not always an event that can be measured in grandiosity and something that's like flashy and wow. Sometimes it's fun to do those big deal things, but kindness can be in those little unmeasurable things. And how do you measure that? And the practicality that I'm sitting with is exactly what we were talking about with funders, with our donors, with the public. We have this need to have some measurables, and I'm not against that. I think what we measure matters, but how do we measure and how do we quantify or validate small acts when they can't always be measured in the numeric ways, maybe qualitative ways, but over time? We don't have necessarily an instant verification that when that piece of pollen gets brought back to the hive, that boom, that produces this amount of jars of honey. It's something far greater and longstanding. And so that is something that we always have to wrestle with as nonprofits, wanting to perpetuate good and help other people do small acts of kindness.
Yeah, that was definitely one of those themes that really popped out for me was, how do we measure kindness? Like, what's the measuring stick for that? And I see that wrestle you're talking with. Like, I like knowing that what I do makes an impact. And if you don't see it, like, maybe you'll see it over time, but when you don't see it right away, it's really hard to say, you know what, I'm really glad I did that. I see the impact, when you haven't seen that impact. Sometimes that instant gratification motivates us, right?
Absolutely. But finding that deeper sense of calling, I think, is really important. And we talked about self-awareness and understanding who we are made in the image of God and what God has called us to helps me anyway, show up every morning with a smile on my face to do hard things, to do it anyway, even when we have nothing flashy on our website. People sometimes think, oh, you're the organization that has that care portal, you deliver beds. Mm. Well, sure, we make sure that the church and the social services and that family sleeping on the floor are connected in a family way, in a very tangible way. But behind the scenes, there's so many other things that we're working on, sitting at these tables with government, sitting at these denominational meetings and networking and showing up in these spaces and voicing when we need to, but often just listening where we haven't been creating understanding across these sectors. That is the hard work. And there is no tangible, visible things immediately. We don't quickly see contracts being drafted up and people quickly wanting to build trust. It's over at that 1,000 cups of coffee of building trust, earning that trust, but showing up anyway. But for me, it comes down to that need to lean into our calling and who God has created us to be and dependency on God to show up anyway, that the results ultimately are up to Him. That's above my pay grade, but I can show up in faithfulness in what God has called me to do, and I will do it. I don't have to question the master on what he's up to. I know it's part of something much bigger than Care Impact, much bigger than myself, but that helps me to show up and bring that pollen in one day at a time.
And while we're motivated by impact, sometimes the reality is we're not always going to see the impact.
That's right.
The reality is sometimes when we invest, there's not going to be any return on investment. Sometimes that bee gets squashed before it can make the honey, right?
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that we don't see is that transformation in us when we do invest, when we are kind. Like, what's the transformation in us? Not necessarily to those around us, but those small acts over and over again, it transforms us. And we also have to remember that Jesus, he gave of himself without any return. The only thing we can give him is our voluntary love and affection, and it's something that he doesn't even need. It's something he desires, but it's not something that he needs. He gave his whole life just for our benefit without having anything in return.
Yeah, 100%. And it brings us back to that passage in Matthew 25, those small acts of kindness. When did we give you that glass of water? When did we visit you in prison? These seemingly unnoticeable things in society that people are like, when I do that in the name of Jesus, it's not so that I can become a spiritual superpower, but as I just show up and be who God has created me to be and act in kindness and in natural, unseen ways, I encounter Christ in those moments. I have an encounter with Christ that changes me, maybe not because I went to prison and I volunteered one time, but it's because I keep showing up. It's because I keep doing what God has called me to do. And I think that is the challenge, not looking for that instant gratification. Ooh, now we've gone on a mission trip, so now we've experienced Jesus and live off of that. It's like, no, how do we keep showing up? How do we see Christ in those everyday moments? And how is it changing and challenging us to be more like him?
So let's talk a little bit about those small gestures versus the large, grand gestures and the impact of those. I know, like for me, like I've been in ministry for quite a while and I have to fundraise for a lot of that. So like some people decide not to give at all because they can't give that $100 a month. They're like, well, I can't afford $100 a month, so I'm just not going to give anything because that's embarrassing to give that $10. I try to tell people, you know what? just you being behind me, that $5, $10 a month, whatever you can afford, like that means a whole lot to me. If we can get 100 people doing that, that makes a huge difference. And I mean, that's just a monetary example. But just thinking about those small gestures, how they can really add up to make a big difference. Did you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, it immediately brings me back to scripture again, that widow's mite. I love the irony of that, where there's people giving these large amounts, and I imagine them almost like the modern day big checks and these political moments where we take these checks. And no offense to those opportunities, those are grand moments. However, Jesus is flipping the script here and says, if you give like this widow, that is what I'm desiring. It's in the little things, but it's also not just because, oh, don't all just give Johan two pennies now, even though we don't have pennies or a toonie, just because, oh, it's so scriptural. But she gave of what she had, and she gave sacrificially. And what sacrifices for me might be different than for you, Johan. For me right now, in the lifestyle that I have with the family and the dynamics that I am called to, right now, giving 2 hours to have a cup of coffee with somebody is my mite. It's something that's sacrificial. I have to adjust myself so that I can show up and be present in that. We can ask ourselves, what is not just giving out of the excess that we have, but what is giving, even if it feels so tiny, what is giving sacrificially because we want to be in those spaces where God loves a cheerful giver. God loves when we act in justice and mercy, not out of compulsion, not because we have to, out of a religious obligation, but when we come in a posture of generosity. It's not the dollar amount. It's not the big acts or the outcome that needs to be like so flashy. It's what is it that we're doing and what God is calling us to do, and do it sacrificially. And sacrifice sometimes is something that we have a hard time with, particularly in the middle and upper class. We can give out of our comfort. We can do things out of philanthropy. And that is almost an exertion of power, Johan, like where I have this disposable time. I can hire this. I have a vehicle. And out of that, I am empowered. I have this margin where maybe people in underprivileged capacities don't have that privilege to do. And so we give out of our excess, and we haven't really given out of sacrifice. Whereas the person that's living on the street and yet they still give the other person in the bus shelter their $5, I venture to say Jesus would have made a parable out of that one.
And sometimes it's not looking at what's going to be a sacrifice. It's just being obedient to what you feel the Lord is asking you to do. And quite often those two things align. So sometimes sacrifice and obedience are the same thing, but I don't want to stand before the Lord and have him ask, hey, remember that time I told you to give? And me just say, yeah, I wasn't listening, or I wasn't paying attention, or that was going to hurt too much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to be in that situation. So really, I don't know if it's a balance thing or just having that generous heart that's willing to give to any need that arises. I mean, I remember how Paul said it. He's like, I wish I had enough to give for every good work. And I kind of want that mindset. It's like, if there's a good work in front of me, I want to be able to give to that. I might not always have something monetary to give, but how can I support that good work that is in front of me?
Yeah. And I think sometimes it's more natural than we think. And we sometimes minimize what that small act that comes so naturally to you, Johan, what a gift it is to society, and how selfish it would be for us to contain it. And it's almost like a false sense of humility of like, oh, I have nothing to give. But no, you showing up with all that you are in obedience, we underestimate the impact of what you have to offer in those situations that might be the right word or the right action or the right presence that other person needed. And we minimize what God can do through little things that he wants to do. And we don't have to know the agenda that God has. He doesn't owe that to me. He asked me just to show up and to be present. So that should be a liberation news for us, news of liberation. I think of the quote, I just quickly looked it up here, from St. Francis of Assisi saying, start by doing what is necessary, that thing in front of us, that God kind of like nudges us and says, like, go help that person cross the street or whatever it is. It could be so random. But start by doing what is necessary, then do what is possible, and suddenly you are doing the impossible. And this is a man of God. This is somebody that was surrendered unto to Christ, but saying, just start with doing what is necessary, then do what is possible. What God expands our horizons. See the loaves and fishes expand. I don't know. It started with loaves and fishes. And then suddenly you are doing the impossible. And I think sometimes we start off wrong. We think, little old me, what could that little act of kindness or that posture of kindness really contribute to this massive situation? And we feel like we've minimized it. And yet we have limited God for what the miracles we are a part of. Whether we see that before our eyes, if we ever hear of the account of what that meant to that stranger on the bus, we may never know, but let's not limit the miracles of God based out of acts and postures of kindness.
And St. Francis was, I believe he was the patron saint of animals, so he probably knew all about the bees.
He probably loved the bees.
And like, we're not just talking about monetary gifts and acts of service, but the core of what we're talking about is kindness. Mm-hmm. And if you think about kindness, it's really not much of a sacrifice to be kind to one another.
Yeah. But you know what I was left with thinking after our last episode with Zach, and we just didn't get there, but I'm sure I would have loved to add it into the conversation. So I'll put it in here and maybe you have some thoughts on it. There's a difference between kindness and being nice. Because I think sometimes we equate them as long as I'm just being nice to people, we are avoiding truth-telling. We are avoiding brave love in those situations. And nice does not make a ripple effect. It helps to keep things still because we're scared of making a ripple effect. We're scared of like rocking the boat, and we're scared of offending people, and we're scared of feeling discomforted. So we're just going to be nice. We can be avoidant with that. Whereas I think kindness, we can still speak the truth in love. We can still have boundaries without enabling people. We can care for the marginalized like that good Samaritan, showing kindness through action, not just good intentions alone. It's not good vibes only. Like, he took action in that, and it is actively caring for the marginalized, not just giving a little token, but not looking them in the eye and being kind, right? And Jesus warns against that performative kindness because it's sort of like the politically correct thing to do, maybe a virtue signaling. See, look, I'm that person that cares for fill in the blank. Kindness can be subtle. It doesn't have to be seen, but niceness can enable harm. I think if I could have one message to the church, stop being so nice and get to the root of the issue. Stop getting so nice and see the elephants in the sanctuary, because that's where kindness can grow. But let's not just skirt around everything. And there's kind ways to handle truth. There's kind ways to handle conflict. There's kind ways to do hard things. And it's in subtle postures of, I'm not going to avoid it. I'm not going to put my head in the sand. But we are going to choose to kindly work through these things. Just not saying, hi, how are you? Oh, good, good. How are you? Like, that's being nice. Okay, my rant is over. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's that plasticky niceness that I don't think that is being kind. I think that's probably doing the opposite, because kindness is speaking truth in love.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're avoiding the truth of a situation, if we're avoiding the hard things, that's not kind. No, it's kindness to speak out truth so that we can journey on ahead in love.
Well, and I wonder if we come across in the church sector, being nice to people could come across a bit like a used car salesman. We'll tell you what you want to hear. We're going to give you that complimentary gross cup of coffee. We're going to do what we can because we want to make the sale. Now, if we transfer that, we want to see that person in distress. We want to see them saved, right? But how are we, and I'm not saying we be jerks about it and just like, oh, like whatever, but being truthful and honest and being present, it's not even just calling them out on sin. It's not even about that. It's creating belonging and presence and kindness without simply enabling so that we make the sale. And sometimes niceness can be transactional because we have a greater motive of something we want. And we think if we're just nice to them, then maybe they will change. I do believe I can sniff out a used car salesman. And that does not sniff like good news to me. I would much rather people be honest. Let's bring it to the car analogy. I want somebody to say, you know what? This vehicle did have an accident. We fixed it up. However, we're going to just like check into the motor to make sure that everything is running. I want them to be honest and kind. I will build trust that way rather than them telling me what I want to hear.
And I think that's why a lot of the world avoids the church, because they often will say the church feels so fake. And they're avoiding the issues. I mean, this whole first season of Journey with Care, we talked about reconciliation with the Indigenous people. And a lot of the church is avoiding that. We're just being nice and saying, well, that's all past. That's not who we are now. But that's one of those hard issues that we need to recognize and speak out the truth in love so that we can move forward. And it's not just being nice to the Indigenous people.
No, we need to be able to sit with our discomfort to even know what kindness looks like. Have we asked the question, what would kindness look like? Right now, they just discovered the bodies that were missing, murdered and missing, the two women. They just discovered the bodies in the landfill. Now, how tragic for one, but what is our response in our own backyard here in Winnipeg? What is the response of the church? How are we going to reach out to those aunties, their children, the people in the community that are most affected? How do we show kindness in this situation? And what is that posture? Or are we just kind of block it out and say, okay, well, it didn't affect me. I feel like we skirt around, we can walk on the other side of the road, so to speak, on a lot of political issues, a lot of cultural issues, a lot of historical pain. And let's face it, historical pain is still being made history today. It doesn't resolve itself because we just move on. We have to actually have a posture of kindness towards reconciliation in the moment. It's having that cup of coffee. It's having those conversations. It's going into hard places that make me uncomfortable. But that is kindness to say, what is it that I need to hear and how can I respond? We don't have to have the answers, but we need to have a humble approach to that is kindness.
Yeah, I want to see the church come to the point where we're provoking those outside the church to want to be in the church because of our kindness. And that's not the way it is. Like even the parable of the Good Samaritan that you bring up, he was not a God follower. The Good Samaritan was not a Christian in that scenario, but he's the one that offered kindness. And that's the one Jesus pointed us to, saying, look what the Good Samaritan did, while the priest walked by and did nothing. So where can the church become like the Good Samaritan, where we're provoking others to want to be part of what God's building in his kingdom?
Yeah, and I think that is a script that's playing itself out in real time right now, Johan, as we're navigating how do we Canadianize the Care Portal platform, which is a care sharing technology that connects a web, an ecosystem, it's beautiful, of service providers and churches and businesses to be able to collectively care in meaningful ways, in ways those in community that are in hard places are advocating for, and we can come alongside and work with them. But one of the challenges that I think we come up against collectively as the church, it's not pointing out a church, it's kind of universal, is if it's not our program, if it's not us initiating the kindness, is it meaningful? How do we track that? Because now we're not saying, okay, we're doing a food bank, or we're going to provide the mattresses, or we do a backpack drive as if we take the initiative. We're actually now responsive to the community member that says, you know what, I'm sleeping on the floor and my social worker and I need to find a solution so we can keep our family together. Now the church can respond to that, but it's flipping the switch on kindness because now we're not in control, we're responsive. So sometimes I will have people say, well, does that youth really need a smartphone? I really want to help them. And I feel like I'm enabling them because kids these days are on phones too much. And this is a real case in scenario, case in point. And yet when we talk to the social worker who is working deeply with this youth who is aging out of care and saying, you know what, this is their only way to get that job. It's their only way to secure that apartment. So this is the starting ground. So I think kindness, we have to release some control. When we give something, we don't have to make sure that they're free of addictions. We don't have to be sure of how they're going to use it. We need to release that and not look out at their outcomes as much as our posture to respond. Because that youth needs that. They should be able to voice that. And even though it's vetted by the agency, we shouldn't have to second guess that. We should do it. Don't let one hand know what the other one is giving. As unto the Lord. And I think if it was a modern day Matthew 25, he would say, when did you give me a cell phone? Right? And yet that's what the posture he's inviting us to when we respond to Care Portal opportunities. When did we serve you? And that's when he will say, well done, good and faithful servant. You gave of what you had. You were obedient with the little. Now I can trust you with more.
So there's a lot of tensions and wrestlings in this conversation, but I think we're just going to leave it there and let our listeners wrestle with it.
Mm-hmm. And we'd love to hear your feedback.
Yeah, my challenge would be like, what does it look like to embrace kindness in a daily rhythm rather than a project, rather than a specific need? What does it look like to embrace kindness in the daily rhythm? But we're going to leave it at that. And now it's time for
Care Lingo.
All right, Wendy, we are in our Care Lingo segment where we demystify these terms and phrases that we use in the caring circles. Today, our word is permanency planning. Now, we had a few people chime in on the Care Impact podcast group, and I encourage our listeners to go visit and become a member so that you can also chime in. The word today was permanency planning. What did some of our group have to say?
Well, we had one person respond. Kathy responded saying, is it coaching someone how to buy a house? So I guess like finding a house is like a permanent, not a rental situation. So maybe coaching, that's what one person thought.
And then my mom chimed in and she thought it might be birth control. I don't know what that means. If that's the first thing that came to your mind and you're listening to your son's podcast, I don't know.
Are you the youngest?
Well, unless you consider the 50 foster children that they've had, I am the homemade youngest, yes.
So you kind of ended the birth order there. You were her permanency planner.
Yes.
Like no more after Johan.
Now, in true Johan fashion, I have two definitions that I might think what permanency planning means.
Okay.
Knowing that my son is almost 19 years old, you know, it's making sure your kid finally moves out when they're 30. This is permanency planning. You know, planning for them to move out before it gets really weird.
Okay.
My other definition. Okay. Now, Danica, my daughter at 25 years old, carefully choosing that tattoo so that 30 to 40 years from now, 30 to 40 years, that it still looks decent. Like you don't want to get that slinky tattoo and then your skin starts to sag.
And it's all saggy.
And then all of a sudden your slinky's having motion every time you walk around, you know? You don't want that. So you need permanency planning for your tattoos. And I encourage our listeners, whatever the real definition of permanency planning is, do it for your tattoos for sure, because no one wants to see
I'd like to challenge you, Johan. You should get a matching one with your daughter. That would be real bonding.
Yeah, I don't know if I could get a tattoo. I don't know if I could do that.
You're closer to Saggy than she is.
Exactly. Although, at least I would know what it looks like in 10 years from now because it's probably
That's already true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what's our real definition of permanency planning? You probably have some good insight into this one.
Well, been around the sun a few times and a few adoptions later and fostering. So permanency planning is often used in social service lingo. When social workers are creating case plans for the well-being of children. And so it's a child-centered approach and saying, what is in the best interest of the child? And we all know permanency matters for a child, that sense of security that they are in a stable living environment. And it could be returning home safely from foster care. So that they have a plan going permanently back home. It could be a reunification. It could be just a prevention from families separating due to crisis, that they create a permanency plan. It could be adoption or a kinship customary care placement. It can mean a lot of things, but ultimately it means how do we create stability for the well-being of a child? So there you go, permanency planning.
All right, there you have it. And one practical way for permanency planning is getting involved with Care Portal, correct?
That is right. So a lot of plans in the works. Of course, we aren't a case management system. Care Portal simply advocates for those needs that support. A lot of things that we advocate for through the portal, our churches are responding to. And did you know, side note here, Johan, over 1,000 children have been served on the portal just here in Canada so far in this pilot. But majority of those are permanency planning in helping families, biological families, stay together.
Well, there you have it. Not only did we give you a definition, we gave you a way to actually get involved. So head over to careimpact.ca to get more information, and we'd love to get that to you. And if you want to join our Facebook podcast group, we would love for you to come join us there. But until next time, remember to stay curious.
Thank you for joining us on Journey with Care. To get more information on weekly episodes, upcoming opportunities, or to connect with our community, visit journeywithcare.ca or find Care Impact on Facebook and Instagram. Or just check the show notes for these links and all the links related to this episode. Share your thoughts, leave us a message, and be part of a network of individuals journeying in faith and purpose. Together, let's discover how we can make a meaningful impact.